Leaders are readers. After interviewing over 300 experts on my podcast, I've compiled the top 30 books written by Mindset Advantage guests. You can download the list and listen to the episodes where I interview the authors at djhillier.com/30books. You can also head over to my Instagram bio to download the free ebook right now. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Mindset Advantage podcast, a show dedicated to insightful conversations in a world full of sound bites. Hosted by fitness coach, performance optimization coach, and national speaker, DJ Hillier. These podcasts are designed to help you attack the gap from where you are now to where you want to be. The episodes take a deep dive into leadership, mindset, and fitness. Follow the show on Instagram at Mindset Advantage Podcast and subscribe to his newsletter at djhillier.com. So let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is DJ Hillier, and you are listening to episode 332 of the Mindset Advantage Podcast. This week, I get to talk with Alistair McCaw. Alistair is a best-selling author and speaker and is recognized as one of the world's foremost figures in leadership, team culture, and performance. For over 25 years, he has worked with some of the most successful people, teams, colleges, and organizations in the world. An international keynote speaker, he has spoken and consulted in more than 50 countries to teach and inspire all over the globe. Alistair is also the man behind the Instagram account, Be Champion Minded, that I highly recommend following. And for those of you that do already follow the account is full of so many great little pieces of wisdom, lots of great quotes, and it gave me the idea to reach out to Alistair and go back and forth on what I would call the 10 lessons to transform your mindset into a superpower. For those of you that have been following me or the show for a while, you know I am a big believer and I just love quotes. And so that really drew me in and I just wanted to pick his brain a little bit, being around some of the best athletes in the world and also having some of the best quotes in the world and some of the best lessons for everybody to learn, not only just athletes, but also parents, professionals, and just anybody that's on the quest to live the best version of yourself. There's a ton of packed great knowledge in here. I highly recommend grabbing a pen and paper and keeping track of the top 10 lessons. If you do enjoy this episode, please be sure to leave a rating, review, and share it on your social medias. Also, don't forget, we are now on YouTube. Head over to YouTube and type in DJ Hillier or the Mindset Advantage Podcast, and you'll be able to watch any of these shows at the comfort of your own home. All right, without further ado, let's get to this fun conversation with the 10 lessons to transform your mindset into a superpower with Alistair McCaw. Let's go. The Mindset Advantage Podcast is brought to you by Element. Element is a tasty electrolyte drink mix with everything you need and nothing you don't. That means lots of salt with no sugar. Element is formulated to help anyone with their electrolyte needs and is perfectly suited for folks following a keto, low carb, or paleo diet. Element contains a science-backed electrolyte ratio of 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium, with none of the junk. No sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, no gluten, no fillers, no BS. Healthy hydration isn't just about drinking water. It's about water plus electrolytes. And it makes sense. You lose both water and sodium when you sweat. So both need to be replaced to prevent things like muscle cramps, headaches, and energy dips. Rob Wolf, founder of Element, is also a biochemist, New York Times bestseller, and previous guest on this podcast, and is someone I trust dearly. Element is currently being used by the highest performers all over the world, including athletes in the NFL, NBA, NHL, Special Forces, and the Olympics. There are several flavors to choose from. My favorite is the citrus salt, which is how I start every single day. And as listeners of the Mindset Advantage podcast, you can receive a free sample pack by using the link www.drinkelement.com/mindsetadvantage. Again, that's www.drinkelement.com/mindsetadvantage. Go get yours now. Alistair, welcome to the Mindset Advantage podcast. It's a joy to have you on the show today, man.
Thank you, DJ. I've heard so much about it, so it's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. You have an incredible Instagram channel, one that's probably my favorite right now. It's Be Champion Minded. You also have several books. You were kind enough to send me your latest, Mindset is Your Superpower, 77 Ways to Achieve Excellence in Your Habits, Routines, and Life. And I love this because the chapters are so short. It's like a nice little daily read to start your day. And so I had the idea as we were kind of going back and forth, how cool would it be to kind of have a podcast in the same way as the book is written, kind of some short lessons to go through for the listeners to become champion minded. So that's what we're going to do today. Well, I don't know how many we'll get through here. It depends on how distracted we get or how many rabbit holes we go down, but we're going to pick apart some of the great quotes from Alistair and from other people in the book and see if we can help the audience a little bit along the way. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds good to me.
First quote, the gap between where you want to be and where you are right now comes down to three things: your habits, your discipline, and your mindset.
Yeah, and in no particular order as well. You know, in one of my books, and I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember which one it was. I wrote about that, you know, I call it the aperture, the gap between where you are right now and where you want to be. And it's one of the questions, DJ, I ask some of my clients, be it in sports and corporate education, law enforcement, whatever, is where do you want to be? What do you want? It's one of the key questions. And really, once we come down to the plan of how we're going to get there, we go straight into the mindset, which is your attitude. You know, if you've got a limited mindset of saying, I can't, you know, there was that quote as well where it says, you're right. And if you say you can, you're right, that you're right too. So it really comes down to that can do or can't attitude, number one. Number two, developing the right habits, which is important. You know, we have all these small, we function on an automatic system every day on default. We don't even realize that we, you know, I'll be the first one to say is that if I have a cup of tea, I've got to have a cookie with it or something, which is a bad habit. I know. And I know I can stop that habit. So it's the awareness of it. And then it's building the discipline to change that habit. So it starts with your mindset. It starts with identifying the habits that need to be improved in your life. And the third thing is developing the discipline. Because here's the thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in the show, is that discipline is stronger than motivation. Motivation is fleeting, but discipline is something that lasts longer. Is it harder? Yes. But getting anywhere worth getting to is going to be hard.
I want to go back to what you'd said in the beginning, because I think I don't want to skip over the importance of this. What you first said, Alistair, was the importance of knowing what you want. This is top of mind for me because I just saw this awesome reel from Oprah saying, what's the best question that you should ask somebody? And she said that the most successful people, the question that they have down to a T is, what do they want? And it sounds so plain and simple to some of us listening, like, what do I want? Like, but have you taken the time to really consider and think about what it is that you want? Or perhaps are you living somebody else's want? Or have you defined success for you? You've talked about that in the book as well. So before we get into habits, discipline, mindset, it sounds like before we get those three dialed in, you first need to know what you want. Talk to me a little bit about that. Very simple question, but not easy question.
100%. And you know, I struggled with that question for a long time. So, you know, when I write a book, I often write from my own experiences. And what I've learned is that my experiences are not very different to everybody else's. You know, we all think that we're unique and nobody has the problems we have. And trust me, 95% of people actually do have the same issues and challenges you have. But in the book, I wrote about having clarity on, and this isn't anything, life, relationships, business, whatever you're going to take on is, what do you want? I think maybe Oprah adds the, what do you really want? Right? I think she adds that in sometimes as well. The second question is, what do you need in order to achieve this? So what's your plan? What's your how? And then the third question is, why is this so important to you? And we go back to your previous question of how we started with that quote of developing the discipline. Because when you have a greater purpose and you have a greater why you're doing something, that's where discipline comes in, because the motivation will wear off. You know, we get excited when we start something, and then after a week or two, that motivation starts to wear off. It starts to become more difficult, like New Year's resolutions. And you know, here's an alarming stat is that by January the 31st of every year, more than 70% of people have failed in their New Year's resolutions. So identifying number one, what you want is the key thing I believe in life. I ask leaders when it comes to their culture, what do you want? What kind of culture do you want? I ask, and I'm not a Dr. Phil here by any means, but what do you want from your relationship? Have you identified those things? And you know, it's as simple as writing down three or four important things. It can be obviously related to your values as well. What do you look for in a relationship? But you know, that's a question, you know, we could spend a long time on in terms of identifying what you want. And as you mentioned there, DJ, it's alarming how many people don't know what they really want. And I'll be the first one to put my hand up and say, I was one of those people 4 or 5 years ago.
There's some key words in that question that I don't want to skip over. I think the word you is important. Sometimes if we don't think about it for ourselves, I like to say that if you don't define success for you, somebody else will. So I think it's really important to really hear the word, what do you want? And I love the adding part of really, because the first answer usually is just lukewarm. It's kind of what I want, but I would even ask it after, but what do you really want? And dive just a second deeper. So listeners, if you're hearing this right now, you're in the car driving, wherever you are, I challenge you to think about that. Not what do you want? What do you really want? Take it a step deeper and see what comes out. It might just surprise you, especially if you've never thought of this before.
You know what? You know what that really adds to it is the really is another word of fear, or a placement for fear. Because what do you want? Okay, this is what I want. This is what I'd like. This is what I hope. This is what I wish for. But what do you really want? Because that's basically saying that going through the uncomfortable, the fear, all these things, what do you really want that's out there? I know we can get very philosophical about this and so on and so forth, but it's really just saying, you know, if you weren't going to fail, and there's that quote as well, I know we're going to be talking about a lot of quotes, but if you knew you wouldn't fail, what would you go for? What would you want? If you knew you wouldn't fail, I think that's where that really comes in.
I love it. Quote number two, don't expect to feel inspired and motivated every day. Even the best don't. Don't count on motivation, count on self-discipline. I think this is something that for a lot of listeners out there, they might think that the best in the world are motivated every single day. That's just what it looks like, because maybe that's what we see is a lot of the highlight reel. But now we're seeing even more guys like Michael Phelps and some people that are at the top of the game or have retired now. They're a little bit more open. I'm saying, like, look, not every day. I'm just like you guys. I'm not any different. I didn't want to go to the pool on Christmas Day. I didn't want to go to the pool when it was my birthday. So talk to me a little bit about why is there a difference there? And, you know, not everybody feels motivated all the time.
You know, funny you should mention Michael, because we were actually just messaging the other night as well. He's a massive Leeds United soccer supporter in England, and I'm a Liverpool supporter, but we follow each other on Instagram. But you're absolutely right. What a great example, because I use Michael in the book quite a bit and have used him in other books as well, like Champion Minded and Habits That Make a Champion. He's just that example of you know, I think there was one time where he didn't miss a day of training in a year, 365 days where he trained, even on days where he didn't feel well, where he maybe had a bit of a cold, a bit of a flu, for example, he still got in the pool and he trained. And, you know, I think with Michael, the vision and the purpose and the why was much bigger, as we just spoke about. You know, when you have a greater purpose and a greater why, that is going to be the reason why you get out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. Which comes down to self-discipline, as we just said in that quote there. You cannot count on motivation. Motivation will have a conversation with you. It's almost like those two little people on your shoulder, one saying, go for it. You know, another one saying, no, stay in bed. It's nice and warm. You know, it's cold outside. You know, you're having that conversation with yourself. And, you know, the self-discipline is more linked to your purpose and your greater why. You know, I was a professional athlete for 10, 11 years on the professional triathlon circuit. I competed in 5 world championships. And trust me, I was highly, highly disciplined. I remember even for years, I never had an ice cream or any candy, or even on Christmas Day, I had a separate meal to my family. I had boiled chicken and rice on Christmas Day instead of having the traditional Christmas dinner. Now that's like, for some people, that's crazy and that's too much and that's obsessed. My goal was to be a world champion. I narrowly missed out. I came second in the world championships, but that was the discipline I had to count on. I couldn't count on motivation, because it's almost, and I say this as well, is you can go to listen to a speech or a motivational speaker, and you're really pumped up for a few hours afterwards, and then tomorrow when you wake up, you're back to the same person. So that's why it's so important to have that purpose and greater reason why.
I'm not sure if it was you. I think it was one of your quotes. I've read several of your quotes in the last couple of weeks, but it was an idea about you're not going to love discipline now, but you're going to love how it pays off later. And for me, one of the ways that I consider myself a disciplined person is because I'm constantly thinking about how it's going to come back to me like a boomerang. How is this going to pay off in the future? And I've talked about this several times on the podcast before, that when I'm in a grueling workout, or I'm in a time where, a place where I don't want to be physically, I'm uncomfortable, I'm thinking about, what am I going to feel like when my head hits the pillow? I call it the pillow test. Am I going to be proud of the effort that I put in today, or a week from now, how am I going to feel? So I have this, I don't know if you call it a hack, strategy, superpower, whatever it is, but I like to look into the future and think about that version of DJ and what would he think right now? So that's my strategy to become more disciplined. I'm curious, do you have one, or do you have one that you would give my listeners on, hey, discipline sounds great, Alistair, but how do I do it, man? You got an idea? You got a strategy for me?
Yeah. It's like habits. It's taking on one small habit at a time. Don't try and take on changing your whole lifestyle. Take on one thing at a time, and that, snowballs into other things as well. But if you can focus on one area in terms of being more disciplined in terms of what time you get up, for example. So let's say you want to create a better morning routine, or maybe you don't have a morning routine. And I believe a morning routine, it's one of the things I've seen in the most successful people I've worked with in corporate and sports, is they have morning routines. So let's say you want to develop a morning routine. I've said that even 20 minutes is great, where it's purposeful, right? If you don't have a morning routine yet. So, we hear of all these morning routines that are 2-3 hours, and, the Tim Ferrisses and so on and so forth. And that's great. But, we all have different lifestyles. Some of us have family, some of us have kids, some of us work late, et cetera, et cetera. But if we can just start by developing 20 minutes a day dedicated to ourselves, and that could be anything where you spend that time meditating. It could be going for a walk for 20 minutes without your phone, just to clear your head, to prepare your mind and body for the day. It could be stretching. It could be reading. Whatever it is that just centers you for the first 20 minutes of your day before life gets hectic, before the rest of the house wakes up, for example, I promise you it will put you in a better place going throughout the day. Now, you might say, well, I need my sleep, and I get it. But maybe try going to bed 20 minutes earlier if you're really stuck on that 7 hours or that 8 hours sleep that you need. But for me, a morning routine was a massive game changer in terms of giving me the discipline. I believe all discipline starts the first thing you wake up. We know of was it Admiral McRaven who spoke about make your bed. The first act of discipline of the day is making your bed. And that's something I do even when I stay in hotels. Yes, I could have room service come in and change the bed. I don't want anybody touching my bed. I slept in that bed. I'm going to make that bed. And even when I leave and check out of the hotel, I'll make my bed because I slept in that bed and I'm going to make it, even though I know it's going to be changed and cleaned and so on and so forth. But it's just the act and the habit that is the most important thing.
Love it. Number three, I like this one a lot. Talent might get you in the door, but it's your attitude and work ethic that determine how long you stay there. That's great.
Yeah, this is probably one of my most favorite ones for athletes and young athletes and sport teams. I'm going to be in Scotland next week speaking to a soccer academy, which they're a very famous soccer academy. And we're going to have kids there probably from the ages of 9 to 19. And this is the quote. This will be the first quote that actually comes up, is a lot of you are talented to get to this level. You had to be. That got you in the door. Okay. It's like the elite of the elite at your age group in this country. However, only 1% of you might make it. We also know what the stats are in, in American colleges of getting a scholarship, you know, that's like 0.17% are going to make it to a professional level after that. It's a crazy stat. And those are very highly talented athletes, or, you know, but it's really going to come down to your attitude, how you show up every day, your work ethic. Are you willing to do extra? Are you willing to give more than what's been asked of you? And, you know, this is in all walks of life, in business. If you want to climb the ladder in your business, in your company, it's about doing more than what's been asked of you. It's about not having a mindset of, well, that's not my role, I don't do that. It's about leading up. It's about leading down in terms of helping others above you, helping others below you. If you were just to do those controllable actions, which require zero talent, I promise you, you're going to advance your career way beyond your wildest dreams.
I tell athletes that at some point in your life, whether it's right now or when you go to the next level, or if you make it to professional, at some point in your life, you're going to meet somebody that has the same level of talent as you, the same speed, the same strength, the same agility, the same IQ. You're going to meet that person, right? If you haven't yet already. In my mind, the only thing that's going to separate you two is what's between the ears. And are you willing to double down on the things that are within your control? And are you willing to do the little things? And to me, in my experience, that the people that separate themselves are the ones that are mostly willing to do the little things, willing to stay positive, willing to work a little bit harder, willing to do the extra rep. And it's just this, it's kind of this epiphany, because some kids haven't met that kid yet, because they're the best in their league. It's like, hey, to me, that doesn't matter yet, because I haven't met that person. But there will be a time in your life. For me, it was when I went from high school football to college football, and you'll go, oh shit, everybody's here. Everybody here is good. Everybody here was the best player. Everybody here was the best player on their high school team. So at that point, that relationship, that meeting is gonna, that square off is gonna happen at some point, right? So now what are you gonna do? You're in the door. Now how do you stay there longer? And I think it comes down to those little things, the attitude, the effort, and then not only focusing on what you can control, but mastering the controllables.
Yeah. It just reminds me of a good friend of mine's daughter who was an incredible violinist. And, you know, from the age of 5, she was playing the violin 3-4 hours a day. So it's one of those classic cases of like a Malcolm Gladwell or Anders Ericsson type of 10,000 hours. And I think she probably went beyond 10,000 hours by the age of 13, 14. And, you know, anyway, she went through the ranks of being in good schools, and then was eventually invited to the Berlin School of Music, which is seen as the pinnacle in music schools, just like the Bolshoi is in Russia for the best ballet dancers in the world, for example. And exactly that astonishment and surprise, because I wouldn't say it was easy for her to play at such a high level, but when she got there, she realized there was another 30, 40 violinists that were as good as her or better than her, which was a shock to the system, because she'd grown up as the best in her class until all of a sudden she's exposed to the very best. So, you know, you talk about those levels. And, you know, I think it's LeBron James and a few basketball players, and LeBron's been a standout as well. He's a bit of an outlier, but he is very aware of, you know, you might be the best kid in your elementary school and the standout player in your high school. But then it just gets more tougher and tougher and tougher. And if you've got that attitude of I'm great, I don't need to learn much, you're going to be in trouble. You know, we know that one of the best learners is Steph Curry. You know, he's still, you know, there's three types of people, I believe, and when it comes to feedback, DJ. The first one doesn't like feedback. The second one likes feedback. And the third one likes feedback and asks for it. There's a difference. So the third one is proactive in asking for it. And that is your Steph Curry's. That is your Lionel Messi's. That's your Ledecky's. Your Phelps you spoke about as well, is that they're very curious. They're, you know, and I just love, actually, you have a sign there behind you saying stay curious. But the best athletes I've worked with, and I can't count how many Olympians I've worked with, probably over 50, 60 Olympians and gold medalists, is that they're all curious. They ask you a lot of questions. They're asking for feedback. So, you know, that's definitely one key area is the curiosity.
You're speaking my love language, Alistair. Curiosity is my favorite word. And I appreciate you diving into that, because I feel the exact same way about it. This is great. Let's go on to number 4. This kind of relates to number 3. The number one underlying reason why the 5% succeed in sports business, or any other field for that matter, is because of this. They are willing to do more than what's been asked.
Yeah. I believe to get further in life, it's all about adding value. And, you know, just before we came on air here, I said to you that, you know, I'm going overseas on the weekend and my phone decided to die on me, which was exactly the same as last year. So I rushed off to Verizon and got my phone changed. And I was speaking to a young gentleman who is 19, and he asked me, you know, what do you do? And I said, I'm an author, I'm a speaker, I get to work in sports teams. And of course he propped up, he's a massive hockey fan, which I'm sure some of you guys up north there are massive hockey fans. And, you know, I got chatting to him, and I love to have conversations, especially with younger people to hear what's going on in their lives and so on and so forth. And he said, oh, that's so cool. I'd love to do what you do, but you know, I don't have this and I don't have this. And I said, oh, whoa. Let's step back a minute. I hardly finished high school. I didn't go to college. I didn't have a further education. I got out and I just worked. I made my work ethic and my attitude my biggest talent. That's what I made. I don't have any qualification that I can go to. I don't have any further education than high school. I said, I worked numerous jobs. And I said, where you are right now is perfect. And he looked at me like in astonishment. You know, he's working at a store, you know, a telephone store. And I said, you are learning so many skills here right now. You're even having conversations with people like myself and so on and so forth. And I said, here's the thing, is that opportunities don't come to you in life. You go to the opportunities. So you make as many connections, you have as many conversations as you can, you build as many relationships as you can, and you're going to see your world expand. I said, that's something I was lucky I did, because I didn't have a choice in my 20s, early 20s, to go to a good school or walk into a good corporate job, for example, or I didn't have parents or someone to help me to get a step up in life. And if you have it, that's great. I'm not judging at all, but I had to make it happen. And, you know, just having those conversations with young people like that, where they almost feel hopeless, they feel like, okay, this is my life now. And it's absolutely not. You know, I think I just put a post out on Twitter or Facebook the other day, just regards that it's never too late to start something new. And I put a list there of, you know, J.K. Rowling was 48 when she got her first book published. We know about Colonel Sanders and you know, I just read there, a lady, I think Julia Hawkins at 103 had run the 100 meter record for her age group. So, you know, it's again, DJ, it's all about your attitude.
Love it. I'm going to move on from that one. We're going to leave that one right where it is. Number five, building confidence is very much the same as building a brick wall. When you take the time to recognize all the small wins you make on a daily basis, you keep adding bricks to your wall of confidence. Confidence is a key theme in this podcast. It's also a key theme in mental performance and working with athletes like I do. It seems like there's a lot of different opinions about confidence and how to build it and where it comes from. It can be a delicate topic depending on the book you read and who you talk to. But I can tell you firsthand that working with student athletes, it's the number one thing they're asking for more help on. So I'm curious if you could break down confidence and small wins and recognizing them, speaking directly to young athletes. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I believe that confidence comes from three things. And I think I wrote about this in my book, Champion Minded. Was first of all, is putting in the preparation. Is that confidence comes from knowing that you're prepared. So it's just like walking into an exam hall and you've either prepared or you haven't. So when you're prepared, there's confidence. The second one, which for me, DJ, is the biggest one, is your self-talk. The dialogue you have with yourself on a daily basis from the minute you wake up to the minute you put your head on the pillow. What are you saying to yourself? So I'll tell you how I start and end my day. And this is a habit I've built, is I start my day in gratitude. And it's become a habit that I'll tell you how I started it was I wanted to start my day with gratitude. And we all do. Okay, no, but I really want to start my day with gratitude. Not just saying it like, oh, I hope so. Okay, so I put a sticker note next to my bed that said gratitude. And for 90 days, I would wake up and the first thing I saw was the word gratitude. And I would think of two things I'm grateful for. Could be anything. A good night's sleep, a warm bed, the fact that I'm going to be speaking on DJ's podcast today, anything that comes to your mind, even something so small as a can't wait, the smell of coffee, whatever it is, great. After 90 days, that became a habit for me where I didn't need that stick-it note anymore. I didn't need that cue, okay? I actually call it the 99 habit rule, which I talk about in the book, Mindset is Your Superpower, is that it takes 90 days to build a habit and only 9 days to lose it. Then how I end my day is with my head on the pillow, like you, and I ask myself three questions. I don't go into a long discussion because I'm maybe tired or I don't want to start having a debate with myself. Is what did I do well today? It can be something so simple. What could I have done better today? You know what? I could have had that. I was very abrupt to that lady at the store today. I need to do better there. And number three, who did I make better today? Right? Who did I add value to today? So those are the three questions that I ask myself, and it takes 30 seconds maybe in my head. I'm not, like I said, going into a deep story about it. And that has been a massive game changer for me in terms of how I start and end my day. But to get back to your question about the confidence thing, first of all, preparation. Second of all, your self-talk, what you say to yourself on a daily basis. You can talk yourself in or out of absolutely anything. Okay, your dialogue is your most important part of your confidence and your belief. And then the third one is called momentum, which is basically another word for habit, right? So if I aim today, just for today, to be as positive as I can, it's going to be tough because I'm going to want to complain about certain things and the long queue at the store and the traffic, and I want to complain. Okay, nope, but I stopped myself in my tracks. All right, good. I got through today, put my head on the pillow and said, hey, you know what I did well today? I didn't complain as much as I did yesterday. That's a good day. Wake up tomorrow, do it again. Wake up the next day, do it again. And over months, over a year, that's how you're going to develop a different habit of thinking.
I love that.
I explain that terminology to athletes because not just athletes, all of us, it's a human behavior. It doesn't matter what you do. Is we're so quick to judge ourselves and others. We're so quick to criticize ourselves and others, right? Instead of recognizing the good in ourselves and recognizing the good in others. I tell you, that's a game changer. If you can become someone that starts to recognize the good things, what you're doing is you're adding another brick to that wall and you're building that wall of confidence. If you're criticizing, judging, beating yourself up about things, you're taking bricks off that wall, and that wall of confidence is just going down.
I love it. I speak a very similar language, and I love the idea of kind of those three pillars. What I'm also hearing is that, because sometimes I'll be working with an athlete, Alistair, and I'll say, hey, you know, they say, I'm dealing with lack of confidence. I don't have any confidence. I say, okay, what are you doing to work on it? Nothing. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing from you, this is a good breakthrough moment here for me and listeners, is that if you want to improve on your confidence, you need to start playing offense, not defense. And what I mean by that is you need to start doing something to improve on your confidence. You can't just wait until you have a good game, because that might be a while. If you're purely resting on results and you're just like, well, I just wait till confidence comes my way. What I'm hearing from your three pillars and the same language that I speak to is that you have to be a little more intentional about it. You have to look for the wins. You have to journal. You have to be aware of the words that are in your head. You have to practice these things. You almost, what I'm saying is you have to practice confidence and not just let it come your way. Because I think that might be what a younger mind might think is, I'll just wait until I hit my next three-pointer. What happens if for the rest of the game you don't hit a three-pointer? Why are you resting on something that you can't control, number one? And then number two, what are some other things you can do to help improve your confidence? Because it's not just going to come to you. You got to be more intentional. You got to do something.
Yeah, your mindset is a skill, just like anything else. So learning to play the piano, learning to play, you know, a new sport is a skill development. Your mind is exactly the same. And just as you said there, DJ, the more you practice it, the more you're going to get better at it. You can't expect to get better at something if you're sitting back and just thinking about it or hoping that it's going to happen. Here's the thing, is hoping is not a strategy. Hope is not a strategy. Action is a strategy. You know, and that's the key thing, is that you've got to be purposeful about it. You've got to be deliberate about it. You've got to, like you said, track. It's hard work. Yes, it is hard work. But if it was so easy, everybody would be great, right, at what they do. But that's the thing is that, you know, excellence requires a plan. It requires hard work, intentional work every single day. And, you know, if you're just hoping for things to happen and hoping to become a more positive person, it's not going to happen because you aren't putting the work into it.
That's great. Next one, number six. Simple but not easy. Again, how you think affects how you perform. Negative inputs equals negative outputs. Positive inputs equals positive outputs.
Yeah, very similar to the previous one with regards building your confidence in the brick wall. You know, what you're going to be putting into your you know, what data you're going to be downloading into your system is what you're basically going to get out of it. So, you know, you need to be intentional every day. And you know, here's the thing is, what's the difference between a positive and negative person? Well, positive people still get negative, but it's how long those negative thoughts stay. A positive person can move on quicker. Labeling somebody a positive person doesn't mean that they're positive all the time. And I love how sometimes, you know, I'm human and I get negative too, but, you know, I might, you know, I play pickleball, which is a sport here, which I'm sure you've heard of, living in Florida now. And I might get upset after a miss or, you know, get a little negative. And then somebody will remind me, hey, don't you write books on positivity and all that? And I said, yeah. Yeah, quick to point that out. I said, I get negative too, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to move on from it quicker. That's the thing. That's the practice. You know, you can't control your thoughts. You can only control how long you allow those thoughts to stay there. I cannot control something coming into my head after I miss a ball into the net or shank a hook on the golf course or whatever, and all of a sudden it comes to me where I'm like, oh, that was stupid. Okay, how long am I going to entertain that thought? All right, and change it to, okay, well, what would I do next time in this situation? Okay, this is what I'd do. I'd maybe hit a little bit more through it or a little bit higher, or whatever it may be. So, you know, positive people still get negative, but it depends. The difference is that positive people can move on quicker. And, you know, a very simple question, DJ, is how do I become a more positive person? Right? How do I become? It's simple. Simple question. How? Simple is that you increase your self-awareness to when you're negative. So in other words, you're aware that you're complaining. You're aware that you're being negative. And you're able to say to yourself, it could be a catchword like stop or change. And you change it to something more positive. That is the first step to you becoming a more positive person.
Awareness is the first step to growth. I love it. We're on a roll here. Number seven. This would be one that I wish I could just yell from the rooftops because I think it's just so darn true. Number seven says this: I've never met a champion who arrived on time and left when the coach called time. Champions take it upon themselves to do more than what's required. It's the key reason why they are champions. I love this quote because it seems like now more than ever, student athletes, they might have be under the belief that, hey, I'm there at practice from 3 to 5. I'm doing what you're telling me. Why am I not here? Why am I not in the starting lineup? Why am I not getting better? And this idea of doing more is almost like a foreign language in some clubs and some places. And so when you said this, I've never met a champion who arrived on time and left on time. I think it just hit me, man. I think it's great. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, if we look into the sports world, you know, we look at the standout athletes like LeBron, and we look at Tom Brady, for example. And if you've ever seen a documentary on Tom Brady, you'll see that he is, you know, he wasn't the best athlete. I think he was the 199th pick, which says everything right there. But his work ethic and, you know, his ability to get to practice way before time, not on time. So never mind Vince Lombardi time of being 15 minutes early. Brady was 50 minutes early, an hour early, prepping his stuff, going through tape, all these things. He'd stay after practice to work with, you know, Gronkowski and all these guys and Edelman and so on and so forth. And, you know, I'm not a massive football fan, NFL fan, but I'm a massive fan of hard workers and guys like Tom Brady and these ones that have just, you know, excelled this that little bit more. It doesn't matter what sport you do. That's not the point here right now. It's just that mindset of excellence. You know, you spoke about Phelps, you speak about Serena Williams. And, you know, I remember a few years back when I was on the pro tennis tour working with a player, there was a tournament out at Stanford in California. And this is probably around about 2009, 2010, when Serena really was unbeatable. And I remember, you know, so my player was playing in the same tournament as Serena. And I remember, you know what, I'm going to book a court tomorrow nice and early before anybody else gets to the stadium, and we're going to get a good 2 hour practice in before anybody comes. And it was a little bit like a Kobe statement of, hey, we're going to get here early and show you how tough we are, how mentally tough we are, and how prepared we are. So I'm super proud. I booked the court. Next day, get up early, 6 o'clock. And if you've worked with professional tennis players, they all love to sleep in. They only wanted practice at 10. I remember when Andre Agassi, you know, started working with Brad Gilbert. You know, in their first conversation, Brad said, hey, I'll see you at the courts at 9:30. And Andre was like, no, I only start at 11. And he said, well, no, that's going to change from now on. So anyway, getting back to the story, we get there. We pull up at 6:45 at the courts. My player is still sleepy-eyed. And get out of the car, and I hear balls being thumped. And a coach just saying, go, go, you know, side to side. And I'm like, well, who's here before us? It's like not even 7 o'clock in the morning. And anyway, pop my head around to the corner. It's Serena Williams, and she's drenched in sweat. You know, she's been there probably at least half an hour already hitting balls. The only one that's out there on the court. And here lies the, I don't want to call it a secret, the reason why champions do more than the rest. You just don't see it. You know, there's that quote as well, DJ, of you know, champions are made when no one is looking, when the lights are out, when the cameras aren't around. And this just, you know, when I saw that with Serena, I was like, yeah, okay, this is the answer right here. And you know, I've spent time with Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer, been on the same court with those guys in Abu Dhabi, and we had training camps with them. And same thing as well. You know, you just see this incredible player at Wimbledon or US Open, and you think, oh, that's greatness. You know, it's just so talented. No, you just don't see. You know, when I was in Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Roger was there, Roger was on the court for 5-6 hours a day when, you know, sometimes he would go through two or three training partners in the period of 5 hours. These guys were like exceptional, but you don't see that. You don't see that.
I had Alan Stein on my podcast a couple weeks ago, and he's a NBA performance coach, speaker, author, and he told almost the identical same story you just told about Kobe Bryant. Showed up to the gym at 4 a.m. thinking that he was going to get there before Kobe because he wanted to impress him, and he opens the door, and he can hear the balls bouncing, and Kobe's already drenched in sweat, and the whole story was about he was working on fundamentals, and he was there even before he was expected to be there. So there's, I like seeing patterns, right? There's a pattern there that two of the best in their sport, two of the greatest of all time, they're putting in more work. I think another thing too is a lot of people want to be champions, but they don't want to put the work in to be the champion. So sometimes, yeah. Alistair, there needs to be a conversation of, I understand, I hear what you're saying. You want to be a champion, you want to be the best, but are you willing to do what it takes to be at that level? Because here's what it takes. Boom, 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 list it all out. Because I tell you what, it sounds great, but when I'm not knocking on your door at 6 o'clock in the morning, you got to be ready to go. It seems to me like sometimes there's a gap between what I want to have happen. I want to be this champion, but I don't really want to put in that much work. Talk to me about, from the coach standpoint, what's that conversation like, where there's a gap between what I want and what I'm actually willing to do?
Yeah, the greatest athletes and best champions I've worked with, and you know, this, I think this can relate to music, entertainment, are self-driven. Yes, they need external motivation, people around them to keep them, you know, motivated and so on. But they're self-driven at the end of the day. That's why if we look at youth sports, you know, how many kids burn out because it's actually the dream of the parents instead of the actual kid themselves. I can see, you know, I've been in the high performance arena for 30 years, and especially being here in Florida, where I've been at, you know, academies like IMG, and I've been around. I've seen players that are now playing in Grand Slams and majors and golf. I knew them when they were 9 years old, 8 years old. So I've been around it and seen the path, and also seen exceptional athletes that didn't make it. We talk about talent, but the talent didn't want to work hard eventually, or the talent was burned out. Simple. Because they were just pushed so hard from the parents and the coaches and so on and so forth. You know, I say this to athletes all the time when they say, you know, what is the secret sauce? What are the keys? I said, there's millions. There's so many things that have to align. You have to be in the right environment. You have to have the right coaches at the right time. There's just so many things that have to like align. So in other words, luck is involved. Luck is involved in your genetics. Luck is involved where you were born. Luck is involved which coaches were around you when you were young. There's so many things. But I believe you need three things. You need the hunger to succeed. Nobody can give that to you. You need it. It has to come from it. So if you want to call it passion, if that's a word you want to call it, fine. Number two is, and we've spoken about this, the self-discipline. Okay? And number three is the mindset to handle adversity, failure, and pressure. Because the better you get, the more of those things that are going to occur. Let's look at a tennis tournament, for example. My apologies if you're not a tennis fan, but just hear me out. In a Grand Slam like Wimbledon or the US Open, or we've just had the Australian Open, there's 128 players that enter the draw. After 2 weeks, there's 127 losers. There's only one winner. At a golf major in the beginning, there's around about 160 of the world's best golfers. On Sunday at 6 p.m., that's the time that most tournaments finish, there's 159 losers. There's one winner. So, you know, all these things that you need to handle, so much failure and disappointment, that is a key factor in becoming, you know, a great athlete or a great musician or a great in entertainment. I hope I didn't go too far off the question there, DJ.
Absolutely love it. This is great. This is great. Let's go to another one here. I like this one a lot. It says, be grateful if you have someone in your life who pushes you to be better every day. Thank that person, because not everybody gets to have that. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. I was very lucky at a young age in high school to have an incredible, and I still see her as one of my best mentors ever. She doesn't know that she was a mentor to me. She was a teacher, track and field coach. And she was my history teacher as well in one of the levels. And she was just very tough. A lot of the kids didn't like her, of course, because she was tough. But she would give you direct feedback. She made me a better athlete. She made me a better person. She was tough but fair. So that was one of my models of leadership from a very young age. And as you know, DJ, leadership and culture today is a massive passion for me. I can sit and watch videos and read books on leadership and culture until it's bedtime. That's no problem for me. I've actually just gone off what the question was there. Yes, it was the people that push you. So she was a person that pushed me. And then throughout my life, I've been very fortunate to put myself in environments where there is more of, I would call it tough love. In terms of I respond better to people that give me the facts. And it's also something in my relationships as well. You know, there might be some people out there that, you know, are looking for the right relationship and so on. Is I've been lucky, and it's something that's been, you know, to find the right relationship, you know, we get back to the very start. What do you want? What do you want from this? And one of the top three values or top three qualities is somebody who tells me the honest truth. And you might not like to hear it all the time. And I don't like to hear it all the time. But I have that person right now who can tell me exactly, you know, what they think. And you need that. And that person pushes me to be better. They don't push me in a way of telling me, but they just improve me in terms of pointing out certain things, of redirecting me, for example, like a GPS. So, yes, don't look for people that tell you what you want to hear. Look for people that tell you what you need to hear. And it's not always easy to hear criticism or to hear, you know, hey, you know what? You really screwed up there. You need to sort that out. We don't want to hear that, but we have to hear that. You know, I'm not sure if there's many Formula One fans out there, but I'm a big Formula One fan. And maybe you've seen Drive to Survive, which is shown a little bit of people about that background. But, you know, I was chatting to Max Verstappen's performance coach 2 weeks ago, and we were just talking about this exact same thing. And he said, you know, all the best drivers have all had that one or two people around them that are able to tell them what they need to hear, like the Lewis Hamiltons and the Max Verstappens, Michael Schumacher, et cetera, you know, and that's another area that's important. It's very dangerous if you've reached a certain level of fame or and now you're too big to listen to other people. You're going down a very, very dangerous road there. And we've seen it, right, DJ, in certain sports and high profile people where they've just become too big, where others are afraid to tell them something that, you know, maybe that they need to hear.
So it seems like there's two different parts. One, make sure you have somebody in your inner circle that can give you the feedback, but then more importantly, make sure that you can take the feedback appropriately. And then, like you said earlier, the difference between just taking it and asking for it. So this is two ways. First, make sure you have somebody. And then two, make sure you know how to respond and make sure you know that you're comfortable asking for it. It's a two-way street.
100%. Yep.
Do a couple more here. This one is from the book here, lesson number three, focus on excellence. I'll just read the excerpt here. We can often get caught up on pursuing success. While there's nothing wrong with this, I believe it's more beneficial to place your focus on excellence instead. Excellence is not about perfection. It's about giving your best with the tools you have. It is about stretching your boundaries, pushing your limits, and giving your best effort. Setting a standard of excellence in your everyday habits, routines, and actions is how you achieve success. Then you say success equals uncontrollable. Excellence equals controllable. I like this a lot because I talk a lot about focusing on the process versus the outcome. And to me, the process is excellence. The outcome could be success. So to me, focus on the process of being excellent, having excellence in everything that you do. If you focus on that, the future will take care of itself. The success will take care of itself. Are we speaking in the same language there?
Yeah, 100%. You know, if I go back to a conversation I had with Roger Federer, and you know, Roger's mom was born in South Africa, and I was brought up in South Africa, so we have a bit of common, speak a bit of Afrikaans, etc. And you know, Roger probably until the age of 14, 15, 14 actually played various sports, and he was very he wasn't he loved tennis, but he wasn't focused on being the best or focused on being number one in the world. He just loved the process of practicing every day and being out there with his friends and having fun. And you know, it's something I've put together for a presentation actually for athletes is you know, some of the key traits of what the best athletes have. And on there is the process of enjoying what you do, right? Enjoying the every day, going to practice, competing, being around other teammates, you know, improving and so on and so forth. And that, you know, that is key. And that's what I call excellence in terms of what you do on a day-to-day basis. We can control what we can do on a day-to-day basis. Most things we can control. You know, that life happens where things can get in the way. That happens, but you know, we can control how much water we drink in a day. We can control what we're going to eat. We can control our schedule most of the time. These things are controllables. And if you tick those off one day at a time, that's excellence occurring. We cannot control what's going to happen next week, next month. We cannot control what's going to happen in a tournament or a race in 3 months' time. All we can do is take care of today. So we can't control success if success is the end result. However, we can control excellence if it's on what you do on a daily basis.
I have one more Alistair quote and then we'll close it down. This one I think speaks really clearly to parents and coaches, perhaps. It says this on page 115, quote, "High standards aren't for everyone, just like excellence isn't for everyone." I think sometimes coaches and parents out there, they want high standards for their student athletes and their kids, and they want excellence and all that stuff. And sometimes just being truthfully honest here with you that the kids or the players, they don't want that, or they don't want that yet, or they don't see the value in it yet. So the quote, "High standards aren't for everyone, just like excellence isn't for everyone." What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, again, getting back to the factor of that it has to come from the person themselves. It has to come from the kid themselves. You know, I can say to you, DJ, right, DJ, you're going to start playing the piano. You're like, well, I don't really like the piano. I prefer playing the guitar. No. I want you to play the piano, DJ, because I think you're going to be good at the piano. You're like, well, I don't really like. And that's the same thing as pushing kids into a particular sport or a particular thing that they don't really want to do. You know, one of the questions I get asked from I was a personal trainer for many years, is what's the best exercise to lose weight? And my answer was the exercise you enjoy the most. And they'd be, well, that's it? Yeah, that's it. I said, because if you enjoy something, you're going to do more of it, right? If I tell you to go run on the treadmill every day, you know, you're probably going to hate me and hate it after 45 days and bomb out. You're not going to carry on and you're done with that. However, if you're going to choose an activity that you enjoy, whatever it may be, walking outside, playing pickleball, playing whatever, and you enjoy that, you're going to do more of it. So the long term, the results are going to come, for example. So I think it's very important that you focus on the things that you love to do, because you're really going to do more of them. You're really going to, parents that push their kids into sports, eventually burnout happens. It's the 1 out of 10 million or 1 million that make it, the outlier, the Agassi, the kid that was pushed at a very young age. But we don't hear of all the rest that didn't make it, that were exceptional. Like I said to you, I could write pages of names of kids that I've witnessed in the last 25 years and probably last 15, 16 years in Florida, who were the best under 12s, the best under 14s in their age groups, that were gone by the age of 16. They didn't even want to pick up a tennis racket again. They didn't even want to go to college on a scholarship, even though they were good enough.
Can I ask you real quick, what was the common theme, do you think? What was the why did that happen? What did you notice? What was the theme?
A lot of the times there was just no, there was the pressure to win. Mm. There was the pressure of, there was no off switch with a lot of the parents, for example. And listen, I'm not here, parents want the best for their kids. I get it. Absolutely. Everybody wants the best for their kids. So you think you're doing the right thing, but you're maybe looking at the outliers who have, been pushed to do this and said, well, that's the way they did it. So our kids also got to do 6 hours a day and go to extra lessons after that again. And they've got to play every tournament available that's on the calendar. So what's happened is that their whole life has become consumed by this one thing. And a lot of the times, there's no off switch. They're talking about it in the car. They're talking about it at dinner. They're talking about it in the morning. And there's no outlet. And that kid just becomes like an inferno, for example. And ask any kid at 11 or 12 what they want to do, and they're going to say what their parents want them to be. I'm going to be a champion. I'm going to win Wimbledon one day. That's really their parents kind of speaking through them most of the time, right? And when they get to 15, 16, they find that they don't really enjoy this anymore, and they don't want to spend all their weekends at tournaments and so on and so forth. So yeah, I think it's two things, DJ. It's the pressure of winning. And it's also just there's no outlet, there's no off switch. It's just 24/7. Parents are talking about their sport, their kids' success, and the pressure just becomes too much. They started off playing the sport because it was fun, and then along came the expectations. And what happens is when expectations increase, enjoyment decreases. So that line becomes further and further away of the expectations become more, and the enjoyment becomes less.
Some great piece of advice in there, Alistair. I appreciate it. The last question I'll ask. So we went through a bunch of amazing quotes from yourself there. I want to close down with, what's your favorite quote that doesn't come from you? What's one of your favorite quotes you've heard from somebody else? And why is it your favorite one as we close down our conversation today?
Oh, gosh, you caught me there. I would say... is it from Eleanor Roosevelt? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I think it's Eleanor Roosevelt. And I know that's pretty bad that I don't know that exactly. But people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Yeah, that would be my favorite quote from somebody else, because it's so spot on.
Yeah, tell me why.
Because people will see through your intentions. If you're only in it for yourself, if you're a leader or a coach who's only in it for yourself, your own ego, your own achievement, for example, people want to know that you care. And, your greater reason why you are coaching them or you are leading them, for example. I'm sure you've experienced it as well, DJ, is that you know if somebody's genuine or not after a while. Kids can pick it up pretty quickly as well, if you really care or not. And that's why the best coaches, the best leaders, the best teachers have been known to truly care. You know, later on in their career, you know that they still have relationships, great relationships with the students that they worked with. They were invited to weddings later on in their life. They maybe got an email or a note from a former student from 15, 20 years ago saying, you know, hey, thank you so much. You changed the direction in my life, and so on and so forth. You know, when people really know you care, that's the key right there.
Awesome. Alistair, this was a lot of fun. Where can I point my listeners to best support you?
Yeah, thanks so much. This has been really fun. Instagram at Be Champion Minded, and Twitter at Alistair McCaw, just my name. Those are probably two of the best social media points as well. And I do try and reply to inboxes. Sometimes I can't get around to all of them, but I definitely do try and interact as much as possible. I'm not one of those guys that just posts stuff and disappears. So.
Awesome. And if you like the quotes and kind of the little blurbs that we went through today, we just scratched the surface. There's 77 of them in this book called Mindset is Your Superpower. You can pretty much get that wherever books are sold. I highly recommend it. It's just a great way. We talk about the 20 minutes to start your day. This would be a great way to start your day and put into your morning routine. Alistair, thanks for your time, man.
It's been great. Thanks a lot, DJ.